We are holding on Zion Amud Aleph, a bit above the middle of the Amud. Line begins up Puma. I think that's actually about a third of the way down the Amud. Line begins up Puma.
Which means?
Puma means that they're at the mouth. We talked about yesterday where a person was inside a burr and then a shur fell on him. Okay. We learned in the Mishnah, we talked about the question whether somebody who's a goyis, who's about to die, who's about to be executed, whether they have an erech, whether they have domim, etc. So in this connection, Tanurabanan, Hayotze Lehorig, if somebody is being taken out to be executed, and again we mean executed by a beis din, where then, as we said, he's a goner because it's possible they might still find exonerating evidence, but it's much less likely. Leaving that aside, a different din. Mazin olav midam chatosu midam ashamay. Suppose that at the same time he has a chatos or an asham that has to be brought, they can sprinkle the blood of it on his behalf. You don't consider it that it's a chatos shemesu ba'alel, because as long as he hasn't been executed, he's still alive. No, it's not a stira. We said yesterday, we do consider him alive. Domim he doesn't have, because nobody's going to buy him. Erech, we said, according to the Tanakama, he doesn't have because of the posuk kol cheirem. Reb Chanina ben Akavya argued with that. But now we're saying the fact is he is still alive. The fact is, for example, if somebody were to, I don't know if somebody were to execute him now, if somebody else were to kill him now, whether it would be Chayav Misa, maybe not, but at least the fact is he is alive. So therefore, you're not going to say it's not considered a Chatas from Meitzer Ba'alah or any such thing. The fact is he is alive. Therefore, they can sprinkle the blood of his Chatas or Asham on his behalf. On the other hand...
You don't have to wait until Asham is offered?
No. One second. Chata ba'oysa shah. But if, as he's going out to be executed, he did an avera, which makes him chayav a korban, ein niskokin lo, then we don't bother with him. We don't say, well, now he has to bring a korban, and therefore we should delay his execution. No, we don't do that. So, my timer, why in that case do we not delay his execution? Shouldn't he need kapara for that avera he just did? Amar Yosef, m'kesha ein ma'ananes dinoy. Similar to what we said before, that we don't want to delay his judgment unduly. Just like we said before, we had the case yesterday where he injured somebody else on the way, and Shimon Elazar said you're not going to return him to Beis Din to judge him for that, because it would be inui adin, it would be unduly delaying inui meloshin, that he feels bad about it, it causes him pain, he's on death row basically, but you know when is it going to actually happen? So here also the same idea. You're not going to delay his execution in order for him to bring his korban. Amalei Abayas. Abayas says ihochi. If you're going to take that logic, afilu reisha nami. Then why in the reisha should it be any different? Doesn't it take time to do the hazav in the reisha of the brisa where it says that you sprinkle the blood for him? Wouldn't it be the same kind of thing? There's a delay involved there also. The brisa that we just quoted. Hayotze lahori mazin olav medam chatosu medam asham. So the answer is. You're right, but actually the Reisha is talking about where he had already designated the korban and they still have to do all the avodas in it, ending with sprinkling the blood. We're talking about it was already shechted at that point. So therefore, the time that it's going to take to sprinkle the blood is not much time. So therefore, it's not really inui adin. So the question is, So what are you telling me? If the korban hadn't been shechted yet, not my, then what would be the din loy? Then you're not going to wait? In that case, adatoni chota ba'oisa shah, in that case, why is the b'raisa mentioning, what are the two cases in the b'raisa? One where you're going to sprinkle the blood on his behalf, and the other one implying that he did the avera sometime earlier, and now you're saying it means the korban is in the middle of being brought, and all that's left to do is the zrika, versus the other case the b'raisa mentions is where he did an avera right now on the spot as he's being taken out to be executed. So, lifloy v'listni b'dida. Instead of talking about that distinction, if you're going to tell me that there's an actual distinction where the korban itself is holding, whether they shechted it yet and just didn't sprinkle the blood versus where they didn't shecht at all, lifloy v'listni b'dida, then the b'raisa should be making a distinction within that case itself. Don't drag in another case where he first does an aveda now when he's being taken to be executed. Talk about within the case where he did an aveda previously and the korban had been designated previously. Let the b'raisa say, b'medron amamurim, when do we say that we go and sprinkle the blood of the korban? Shehoyah zevach zavuach ba'oisa shah, only if the blood had already been sprinkled, only if the korban had already been shechted at that time, and the only thing remaining to do is the sprinkling, and you're saying that takes only a little time. aval ein zevach zavuach loit. But if the korban hadn't been shechted yet, the b'raisa should tell us, then you don't. Then you don't wait for the korban to be shechted and the blood to be sprinkled. The fact that the b'raisa doesn't make that distinction seems to imply that it's actually a distinction. Was it an aveira that he did previously and already designated a korban for, versus is it one that he did now and didn't yet designate a korban for? And yet you're telling me that it's not really a matter of that. It's a matter of how long is it going to take. Shechting and then sprinkling the blood is going to take a while, whereas only sprinkling is going to take a little time. But the Braisa doesn't seem to be making that distinction.
So
that's the question. So the question is, in that case, so what are you telling me? It's a matter of Inri Hadin. Then it should be a matter of, has a korban been designated yet? Apparently, the Braisa seems to be implying once a korban. Apparently, the Braisa seems to be saying it's not what stage an existing korban is at, but rather, has a korban even been designated yet? The answer is no. Look, a hochinami kamar. Actually, that is what the b'raisa means. Like Rabbi Yosef is saying, b'medvar mamurim, when do we say that we sprinkle the blood? Show you zevach zavuach ba'ezeshah. If the korban had already been shechted at the time when he's being taken out to be executed, then fine, we're going to wait until for them to do the zrika, because that doesn't take that long. Aval ein zevach zavuach. But if the korban had not yet been shechted, nasa k'mishachot ba'ezeshah. It's as if he did the aveda at this time. And therefore, we're in this and therefore we don't bother, we don't wait for him, for the korban to be brought. In other words, yes, the b'raisa is in fact making that distinction that Rabbi Yosef wants to make between whether all that's left to do is the zrika versus where there's also the shchita to be done. If the shchita, in other words, you have three possible cases, basically. You have where no korban had been designated yet, korban had been designated but had not yet been shechted, or had been designated and shechted, but the blood hadn't been sprinkled yet. Abaya thought that the b'raisa is making a distinction only between the first case and the other two. And Rabbi Yosef is telling him, no, between whether it's designated or not. And Rabbi Yosef is telling him that, no, it's the distinction actually between the second and third case. The second case, where it hadn't yet been shechted, is the equivalent of the first case where it hadn't even been designated yet. In those two cases, in this talk, in life, we don't worry about him and his korban, and we just go ahead and execute him. Only in the third case, where it had already been shechted, and all that's left to do is the zrika, then fine, we'll wait and do the zrika before, then fine, we'll do the zrika before he, and wait a couple of minutes for them to do that before we execute him, so that the korban can
be
brought.
Basically, the case, whether it's before the shechita or after the shechita.
Right, that's the distinction we're making.
That's the distinction.
Right. And Tosfos points out, by the way, this is only as far as Chappas and Asham. If it was an Ola, there wouldn't be an issue anyway, because an Ola can be brought after the owner of it died anyway, so then there'd be no reason to delay his execution until they sprinkle the blood of an Ola. Okay, fine.
What about if it's two
Chappas? I don't know. I guess each one is in its own way. Which one was shechted? I mean, if one of them was shechted, then the one that was shechted, we go ahead and sprinkle the blood. The other one, we don't. I don't know.
So that means to wait.
And then, I don't understand. If you have one of them was already shechted.
One shechted, but the other one has not been shechted.
Okay, so then you're not going to shech the other one, because that would be man, and it's dinner. You're delaying on duty. Okay. All right, since we talked about the case where a person is being taken out to be executed, so now the Mishnah is going to digress to talk about another din that applies when somebody is about to be executed. Nothing in and of itself to do with Erchin, but just in connection with this idea of people about to be executed by Beis Din. Mishnah says, Isha Shiyotza Lehoreg, if a woman is being taken out to be executed, women, of course, can be executed for Averus just like men, Ein Mamtinin La'achetelid, then you don't wait until, if she's pregnant, you don't wait for her till she gives birth. You execute her, and the baby also dies along with her. Okay, Rashi, so that's a good question. So Rashi says the reason is because the chad gufahu, ultimately it's one guf, uber yerech imayhu, the baby is considered a limb of the mother as long as she hasn't started giving birth yet, as the Mishnah is going to continue. Therefore, yeah, the same way as you don't say, for example, let's say she did the Aveira with her mouth. You're not going to say that only, her mouth did the Aveira and her hands didn't. Hold on, hold that thought. Hold that thought. Hold on. We're going to talk about the Gemara. We're going to get to, yeah. I told you. I wrote on the WhatsApp. We're going to be talking about abortions. We're going to be talking about autopsies. We're going to, yeah. Okay. Fine. So Rashi says the reason is because it's one goof. Tosfos in Nida talks about a couple of other possibilities. One of them is maybe even if we don't say Uber Yerech Imoyhu, maybe we could say, okay, but the Gemara Din was on her, and effectively the baby is included, and effectively the baby is included as well, even if you say it's a separate goof, but still, yeah.
One group.
Yeah. On the other hand, if she sits on the birth stool, meaning she's already going into labor, then we do have to wait till she gives birth. Because once the baby started moving, once it started moving from its place, then already it's considered a separate goof. Then you can't say that it's considered part of her goof, and therefore that when you execute her, then the baby is going to be killed as well. Rashi explains, we're talking about over here, Rashi says we're talking about if she started giving birth before Gemar Din.
Contractions.
Yeah, she started on contractions, started going into labor before Gemar Din. Tosfos argues on that, and then Shitim Kovetsis brings from the Rosh that it seems a little questionable to assume that it's only before Gemar Din. Maybe it should have the Pashtos. We were talking about the case where Yotzes Laharik, so the Pashtos were talking about even after Gemar Din. Even if so, when Gemar Din was done, she hadn't yet gone into labor. But sometime between then and when they execute her, she goes into labor. Apparently, the same din would apply. They say. In other words, Tosfos says that, you know, yes, in general we say, in the Reish actually, Tosfos says a different reason. The reason why in the previous case, in Mamtin and Lacha Taylor, not specifically because of Rashi's reason, because it's one goof, but rather because, again, a matter of Inui Adin. You don't delay the din unduly. The point is,
Inui Adin not to delay it because she...
But nevertheless, Inui Adin for her, that you're delaying her judgment for some other side issue, namely the baby. Yes, a baby, saving a baby is an important.
A lot of stress on her, that a baby is killed.
Well, she herself is getting killed. That's the ultimate distress for her also. Fine, but Inui Adin is a concept that you don't delay the judge. And actually, not everybody agrees that the reason for Inui Adin is so much because of the tsar of the person who's going to be executed. There are other reasons why Inui Adin you can't do anyway. But whatever the case, the point is that Tosfos learns that to delay her execution for a month or 2 months or however long it is until she's going to have the baby would be Inui Adin. Whereas once she goes into labor, then there's not really it's not much of an Inui Adin, similar to what we said before about sprinkling the blood of the carbon, because it's not going to be that long till she gives birth. Okay. According to Rashi, we're talking about that Davka, if she went into labor before Gemar Din, according to Rashi, if she went into labor after Gemar Din, doesn't matter. The baby was part of her group at the time of Gemar Din, and therefore it gets executed as well. Whereas according to Tosfos, it would be a matter, even if she went into labor after Gemar Din. The din would still be that you wait until she gives birth. Okay. Continues the mission. We don't have a base din that executes nowadays anyway, so it's a bit of a moot point. It is as far as the halachas of a person being executed by base din. I mean, there are other dinim that come out of these things. For example, you mentioned abortion and other such things. We'll get to those as we discuss in the Gemara and as we discuss what the Rishonim and Achronim have to say about all this. So wait. Continues the Mishnah, Ha'isha Shenerga, when a woman was executed, Nen in Besara, you're allowed to have Hana from her hair. Now, why should that be? On the face of it, a mess is usually also Hana. We'll deal with that in the Gemara. Behema Shenerga, on the other hand, if an animal was executed, as we know, for example, a shor who killed anybody, Tam or Mord, is executed, for example, also a behema that was used for bestiality, whatever, Asura Hana, all of it is also Hana, including its hair and everything. Skin, everything. Okay. So the Gemara starts off. Shitta. Isn't it obvious, the first case of the Mishnah, that when you execute in the pregnant woman, that you don't wait till she gives birth, but rather, if that the baby is going to die with her as well, then that's how it is. On the face of it, isn't it Pasher? Gufahu. Isn't the baby is part of her guf? As Rashi said, it's part of her goof. According to the other explanations, also the point is that you're not going to do Inui Adin for the sake of saving one part of her body. In other words, now you're mentioning abortion. It's interesting. So one of the Achronim, who you have of course many Achronim that deal with many Rishonim and Achronim that deal with this whole Gemara over here in connection with various questions of abortion, the Chavis Yer brings a case in one of his Chuvis where a woman became pregnant from a goy and she wanted to have an abortion. And the Chavis Yer tells her, look, in our Gemara, he writes a tshuva about it. He tells her, look, our Gemara is saying gufahu, but that's because we're talking about where she herself needs to be executed. It's a mitzvah from the Torah. It's just like you have a mitzvah to keep Shabbos and to be honest in business and so on and so forth. You have a base din has a mitzvah to kill with skila, people who are high of skila, and strafer, people who are high of strafer, etc. Those are considered four of the 613 mitzvahs. So therefore, in that case, the Gemara can be saying, isn't it obvious if she herself is going to be executed, then the baby goes along with her because he's part of her goof, as Rashi says, or because Inuya Dina Tosfos says, or whatever. The point is, in other words, absent that consideration, where the woman herself is not chayav mitzvah, then no, there isn't really a heter to be performing an abortion for that kind of thing. He talks about it, but even before the baby is viable, he talks about it. It's a matter of zera levatola. You're wasting seed because this baby could have this unborn baby could have eventually So therefore he says it's also. So that
it's also because
you're wasting seed because zera levatola.
It's a lie.
Okay, no, it's not, no, it's only a potential life at this point. We're going to discuss that later on, actually, in the Gemara. But actually, as long as it's in the womb, it's only considered well, there is actually further, I mean, we could get into a long discussion about this, but there is actually a difference in this regard, according to most poskim, between Jews and Goyim. Goyim, in fact, are not allowed to perform abortions. And if they do, according to many poskim, they're actually chayav nisah for it. Because for them, it's considered a live baby. For us, we have a din that the Torah mentions, which we're going to mention on this line of the Gemara over here, that an unborn baby is not considered fully alive. So you actually have a Mishnah in Olos. Yeah, we have a Mishnah in Olos. The Rosh brings it over here in Shittim Ukubetis. That you have a case where a woman is where a woman is pregnant and her life is in danger. You even have actually where she's already in labor and it's a hard labor, you're allowed to actually perform an abortion and kill the baby because it's threatening her life.
Yeah.
No, but the point is, in other words, one idea is, because the point is, in other words, once the baby's head comes out, then you're not allowed to, because once the baby's head comes out, you have a concept, ein dochin nefesh mitnei nefesh. You don't set aside one life for another. Once his head comes out, as we learned in Bechoris, he's considered
life.
Fully born. Now it's another life. So if he was a regular kind of roidus, like, for example, the typical kind of roidus, somebody who's actually an assailant who's trying to kill or rape somebody else, fine, then masil nos benafshe. But over here, he's not doing it voluntarily, of course not. He's a baby. He can't. No. So that's the point. The distinction is we have a multi-way distinction over here. Before the baby is born, we say, even though the danger that he's causing to his mother is not something that he's doing of his own volition, nevertheless, we set aside his potential life in order to save the mother's existing life, and therefore an abortion would be mutter in that case. On the other hand, once the baby's head comes out, if we were to say that he's a regular run-of-the-mill roidif, as in he's consciously trying to endanger his mother, sure, we would still kill him because there would still be...
One second.
But because he's not doing it consciously, therefore the din becomes ein dochin nefesh mitnei nefesh. You have, in effect, one person is accidentally threatening another person's life. You can't say you kill him in order to save the other person. So that's the din. Once his head comes out, then we say ein dochin nefesh mitnei nefesh. As long as he's in the womb, if he's endangering his mother's life, then you are allowed to, then a yid would be allowed to perform an abortion.
But if he's not endangering his mother's life in the womb,
so then there's no particular reason that it, so then the chavis, then you have what the chavis yorah is saying, that an abortion is oster, if nothing else, on the grounds of zera levatola.
Fine. So what are we talking about?
Because over here, the woman herself is chayav misa anyway. And again, according to Rashi, the baby is considered part of her guf, and according to Tosfos, it's because of Inuya Din, or because the Psak Din, or the Gemar Din on her automatically includes the baby. So therefore, that's different. You have an overarching reason to execute her, and therefore, there's no particular Inyan to save the baby in that case. And in fact, if you did in this case, you'd be guilty of Inuya Din.
That's what seems to be
contradiction. No, it's not a
contradiction. One second.
Okay.
One case, you say there's one group, and then in the case of the abortion, when she's not like threatened, you say
then it's a matter of zera levatola. But over here, okay, but zera levatola is a serious issue. But when you have counter it, you have a mitzvah esef in the Torah to execute this woman.
No, I'm saying it's in the case of the execution, right?
Yes.
You say it's one group.
Yes. In the case of a regular abortion, you also say it's one goof, fine. But the fact is that you still have a, so what, it's one goof. You still have an issue of zera levatola. You still have an issue of wasting seed. So therefore, the argument is, the Chavetz Chaim says, so therefore, if you have an overarching reason, as you do in this case with the execution, then you go ahead and do it. Same way as in other cases. If you have, for example, Poskim Achronim talk about, let's say, for example, sperm donors, are they allowed to, I mean, on face of it, they're being Motzi Zera Levatola. Right? I mean, let's not even get into a donor, let's not even get into artificial insemination from a donor. That brings up whole other issues, but let's say artificial insemination from the husband. So some poskim achronim allow it on the grounds that it's not motzi zera levatola because you're doing it for a purpose. You're doing it in order to put in a test tube and then et cetera. But where there's no higher purpose like that, then it would be awesome. So that's the Chavetz Chaim is arguing. In that case, there's no higher purpose for it. Whereas over here, for example, there is.
Which is
the execution of the mother, right? Yeah. Okay, let's go on. So, on the face of it, the Gemara says, again, what's the chiddush that when you execute her, that you don't wait for the baby to be born? The baby is part of her goof, so whatever happens to her happens to the baby. What's the chiddush? The answer is, itzrich. We need the Mishnah to tell us. Because you would think like this. Now, you have a pasuk in Parashas Mishpatim that describes, suppose it says two people are fighting, and one of them hits a pregnant woman and causes her to miscarry. So he's chayev to pay what's called Gmei Vlodis, the potential value of those babies. And what is that? The pasuk says, Kasher Yoshis Ola Bala Isha, according to what the husband of this woman imposes on him, meaning they go to Beis Din and they figure out basically the difference in value of her pregnant and not pregnant. So therefore, you would argue, Mamona de Balhu. Therefore, in that sense, her husband has a certain monetary interest in these babies. It's not totally considered part of her goof, in other words. It's not exclusively part of her goof. So therefore, Valei Lifsa de Mine. So at least you should say that in that case, fine, you have to execute her. But maybe her husband has a certain right to these babies as well. And therefore you shouldn't be mastered that from him. Kamash Malan, that is why the Mishnah tells us otherwise. So the question is, in that case, ve'ema hachinami, maybe indeed that would be the din. Where does the Mishnah tells us that you don't wait? But Taka, where does the Mishnah know from that you don't wait? The answer is Amar Rabbo, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Amar Kro umesu gam shnehem. The pasuk says, the pasuk describes a case where a man and woman are mizana, a married woman, nara maros or whatever is mizana, with a man, and the pasuk says umesu gam shnehem, both of them are to be killed. Meaning, and that means l'rabes is a vlad. That comes to include the vlad. That comes to include the vlad as well. That if she's pregnant, then when you execute her, then the baby is going to die as well.
So
the ema hachinami means how it may be indeed. How do you know that if she's pregnant, you don't wait until she gives birth. Maybe you do wait because, as we said, the husband has a certain interest in these babies. And the answer is we learn from the pasuk because there's a kasuk umesu gam shnehem that both of them have to be executed. L'rabas is a vlad. So the question is you're not learning that from the pasuk. You're learning a different din. V'hai mi boilei ad shiyu shnehem shovin divrei Rav Yoshia. Rav Yoshia says that pasuk is teaching us a different din, that you only execute them only if both of them are shovim, both of them are equally punishable. No, we're not talking about the baby. We mean the man and the woman who were mizana. Meaning, in other words, let's say, for example, an adult man was mizana with a woman who was a katana, or vice versa. Now, a katana or a katana are not bar oinshin, they're not executed. So therefore, in that case, the gadol, the adult, wouldn't be executed either. Gam shneim. That's what it means. That has to be shneim shavim. Rabbi Negoshim learns a little differently. That both of them have to be. In other words, if you have one of them is able to be executed because he's an adult and the other one not because she's a child or vice versa, then you don't execute either one of them. That's what we learn from Meisu Gam Shneim. Okay, Rabbi Negoshim learns a little differently. Also, that it means also both of them have to be mazed. Anyway, the point is, so we learn that from the pasuk. The answer is ki ka amrit mi gam. Okay, but there's two different things. You have the word gam and you have the word shnehem. From gam, we're learning also the baby. From shnehem, we're learning that shnehem shavu. So the pasuk didn't have to say it at all. The pasuk could have just said umesu. You find a man being mizana with a woman, umesu. The fact that it says gam and it says shnehem. So the word shnehem teaches us they both have to be equally. They both have to be adults, for example. And gam means that also the baby is that also the baby you don't wait for the baby to be born. P is needed. And then what do you mean? P. What do you say? Ki ka'amrit. When you're saying that we learn the baby, me gam. You're learning it from the word gam. Okay. Fine. Then we said in the Mishnah, Yoshva la Mashva v'chola. We said if she is a...
Dinin Nefashis,
a man is Nizana with a woman. Oh, that's talking about Dinin Mominus. Right, there we're talking about again. We're talking about one person was fighting with another one. One of them hit a pregnant woman and caused her to miscarry. So yeah, there's no Dinin Nefashis involved. Again, that's...
Why do we infer from one...
That's the point. We would think that because the husband has a monetary interest in these babies from Dinin Mominus, therefore, in the case over here of executing the mother, we should wait until she gives birth in order that the father don't... You could think, because the father shouldn't be losing out on this monetary value.
But we don't apply Dinin Mominus.
Doesn't matter. It's not a matter of applying. It's a matter of saying that because we have a Dinin Mominus issue involved, we also have a Dinin Nefashis issue involved, maybe for the sake of the Dinin Mominus issue, we should delay the Dinin Nefashis. And we're learning from Umesu Gam Shneim that you don't do that.
That's more understandable on the principle of Inriyadim.
Okay, according to Rashi, it's a matter of, that's basically part of her growth. According to Tosfos, it's a matter of Inriyadim, or a matter of that the Gemara Din on her automatically includes the babies. Okay, whatever it is, there's a concept we're saying. Yeah, from this possible, Umesu Gam Shneim, specifically from the word Gam, right. Okay, then we said in the Mishnah, Yoshva la Mashva b'chola, that if she sits on the birth stool, if she's ready in labor, then you do wait till the baby is born. My time, why is that? Kiven to Okar, because once the baby starts moving from its place, guf achrin, who then is ready, it's another guf. So then you can't say that once, then you can't say that he's yerech imoy, or that the gemara din on her includes him, etc., and therefore you do have to wait.
Akar,
gufa? Okar, kiven to Okar, once it's uprooted from its place, guf achrin, who it's a separate guf. Not even before the head comes out. Before the head comes out, once it starts moving from its place in the womb, yeah. once labor starts, in other words, if the baby is moving from its place and then contraction starting to travel down the birth canal, whatever. So then already it's a separate group.
But we say the separate group comes at the stage of the head.
It's a separate life at the stage when the head comes out. We're not talking about even a question of a separate life. There's different stages. It's part of her goof. It's a separate goof, but still not a life yet. And when it's actually born, we're there, it's a separate life. Okay. More on this topic. Amar Rabbi Yehuda Amar Shmuel. Ha'isha ha'yotza lehoreg. When a pregnant woman, is being taken to be executed, so we said in the Mishnah, we're not waiting until she gives birth, but we have a bit of another issue because after she's executed, she may end up giving birth and it would be nivul. It would be a desecration of the body. Therefore, maki would be like the body, it becomes disgusting. And you have to have covered for a mess. So therefore, maki nois the keneged base heroin. Therefore, what you do is first you hit her on the stomach, on the womb, kadesha yomos haplad, in order that the baby should die, tchila, first, kadesha le tovi li de nivul. This way it doesn't end up after she's executed that the baby comes out and there's nivul. So again, this is an example of, normally we would say abortion is aser on one ground or another, but in this case, where without doing it, there's a problem of nivul, which is also an iser, then we're doing that. She's still alive. Nivul means...
She's alive and the baby's alive
we're killing the baby while it's in the womb. Nivul would mean that the body becomes disgusting, the fluids and everything that are coming out of it afterwards. Wait a minute, Tayeva. Tayeva is what the Torah defines with them. Normally it would be, and this is also normally Tayeva to kill a person. The Torah tells us Lo Tirtzach. The same Torah that tells us Lo Tirtzach tells us that Yahweh tells us Umesu Gam Shneim. So the same Torah also tells us that you have to, yeah. So the question is, Lememra dihi kodmo umesa beresha? Are you telling me that when a pregnant woman that when a pregnant woman dies, she's going to die first, and the baby may still remain alive, and then afterwards come out of the womb after her death? We know for a fact, we establish in a different context in Halacha, that the baby dies first. And therefore, so in other words, what's the problem? Once she's executed, the baby is also going to be dead.
Okay, the baby dies first,
yes.
And the mother dies first.
No, we're saying that when a pregnant woman dies, and right now the Gemara is assuming for purposes of the question that there's no difference of the cause of death. In the answer, we're going to make a distinction between causes of death. But right now, the Gemara is assuming, for argument's sake, that there's no difference of the cause of death. Always the baby is going to die before the mother. So for Hakaimalon, we know as a halachic fact, Devlad Mayis Predation, the baby dies first. I mean, no, one second.
In every case?
Hold on, hold on. We're assuming that it's in every case. We're going to answer that it's not necessarily in every case. But we know that, Dichnan, we learn in a Mishnah in Bava Basra, Tinech ben yoimoy neuchel umanchil, a baby even one day old, meaning not one day, meaning on the day he's born, once he comes out of the womb, neuchel, he's able to inherit. So let's say, for example, the baby, as soon as the baby is born, if his father had previously died, then he right away yarshins the property, even though he's only a newborn baby, umanchil, and he then bequeaths it to his relatives, meaning, so let's say a baby was born and immediately on the same day died.
Right.
Now let's say he was his father's only son. So what's gonna let's say he was his father's only son. So now he yarshins the property, but now that he's dead, then he bequeaths it to the next set of yarshim, which are his father's brothers. So he inherits as a newborn baby, and then he bequeaths it as soon as he dies. Right. The Almud of Sheshes, Sheshes clarifies, what do you mean, Neuchel Amanchil? If we're just talking about to make his father's brothers inherit, for example, you don't need him. Without him ever having been born, they would automatically inherit if his father dies childless. What it means is, Rav Sheshes says, Neuchel b'nichseh ha'em l'hanchil l'achin min ha'av. It means like this. Suppose this baby is born, and suppose his mother died previously. Now, let's say, for example, his mother was alive at the time of the birth. Then she died shortly thereafter. So he now yarshins all of her property, the baby, because let's say he's her only son. So he yarshins all her property. Now, when he dies a couple of hours later, even though it's all the same day, then his brothers from his father's side, who are not at all related to his mother, because let's say his father was married to two wives, one after the other, or at the same time, before Chayim Be'er Ben Agoshim, whatever. So you have, let's put names on it. You have, Yaakov is married to Rachel and Leah, let's say. So he had children with Rachel. Now he has a baby, and then he died.
The father.
Forget about his brothers. He also has another wife, Leah. Leah gives birth to a baby. She dies a couple of hours after that. Leah's property, which let's say she inherited from her father, goes now to this baby. And now when this baby dies, then it did, because Leah has no other, because Leah's baby, yeah. Because Leah's baby dies, now the inheritance doesn't go, now there's nobody on her side to get it. It goes to this baby's brothers from his father's side. So it goes to Rachel's children with Yaakov. Even though they're not at all related to Leah. So that's the point. And the point is, he transfers the Nachla.
Father's wife.
No, yeah. It doesn't matter whether, no, well, Leah's dead now. The point is, Leah inherited property from her father. She was like no sloth, but she inherited property from her father.
She was his first wife.
It doesn't matter whether she was his first or a second for our purposes. The point is that her property would go to her son.
Right.
So she now had a son, Reuven.
Right.
So now, Reuven, as soon as Leah dies, Reuven inherits Leah's property.
Right.
But now, when Reuven himself, the newborn baby, dies a couple of hours later, who gets the property? It doesn't go back to Leah's relatives. You don't say that if Leah hadn't had any children, it would go to Leah's family. But because he came here, because he was alive, therefore it ends up going to Yaakov's children with Rachel. It ends up going to Yosef and Binyamin. So that's the point. The father's side, So that's the point. And Davka Ben Yonechad, and all of that applies only if he's at least one day, well, in other words, on the day he was born, Abel Uber Loy, but we say the same din would not apply if his mother died while she was pregnant. Then we would say that not, and the reason is, because in that case, we assume he died first, and the rule is, Ve'ena Ben Yodesh Asima Bekever Lahan Chela'achin Mina'ab. This whole concept of that Reuven, the baby, is going to take the nachla of his mother Leah and transfer it to his brothers from his father's side, Yosef and Binyamin, that only applies if Reuven was alive at the time when Leah died. But if he wasn't, if Reuven the baby dies first in the womb, or even outside the womb for that matter, we don't say, when Leah dies, he would have been, had he still been alive, her Yodesh, and therefore it goes from him to his brothers. We don't say that. So therefore, that's why we can only say this din only if Reuven, the baby, was born. If he hadn't been born yet, the assumption is that he died in the womb before Leah did, and therefore the property does not go from Leah to Reuven and then from Reuven to Yosef and Binyamin. Rather, it goes to Leah's relatives. So therefore, so we see from that discussion that the baby is assumed to die first. So what are you telling me over here that we need to hit this pregnant woman to force the baby to be killed if anyway it's going to die before her? The answer is Hanimili Lagabi Misa. There's a difference of the cause of death. When she dies of natural causes, then yes, the baby dies first. Because Ivy Givlad Zutra Chayuse, because a baby has very little life force to him, basically he depends on his mother for his oxygen and for everything that he needs. Therefore, Ayla Tipper de Malach HaMavis or Mechatech Lahu L'Simanim. Therefore, when the drop from the Malach HaMavis comes in to the mother, it gets to his Simanim first and cuts them. In other words, his life force gets cut off before hers. He suffocates or whatever it is exactly in the womb before she dies. Avol Neherga, but when the cause of death, in a natural death, but if she was executed, if she was killed, he may sabadesha. Then yes, she dies first. So therefore there still is the possibility that he might manage to get out of the womb after she's dead, and therefore to prevent that, we have this business about hitting her.
In all cases,
so we're saying it depends.
The baby always dies before the mother.
No, again, we're saying within a natural death.
In a natural
death. Yes. So that's the question. One second. We're going to talk about that more, but wait. So the question is, didn't it once happen that there was a mother who died naturally, and the baby was still kicking or moving around three times? So in other words, he was still alive after she died. The answer is that wasn't really that it was alive, that was just muscular contractions. That's no different than the case, for example, if you cut off a lizard's tail, it'll still move around a bit, because you still have muscular contractions, nerves that are firing, neurons that are firing, or whatever, but it's not actually alive, because it was separated from the body. The same way, this baby that was still kicking, or whatever, after the mother is dead, we can't assume that it was actually alive. So therefore, you still have the point that When the mother dies, we can assume that the general assumption is that he died first. Therefore, the Yerusha does not go through him to his brothers. On the other hand, when she's executed or otherwise killed, then yes. Hold that thought, because the Gemara continues. Amar Rav Nachman Amar Shmuel, her isha she yoshva ala mashber umesa b'shabbes. Suppose a woman sits on the busu, goes into labor and then dies on Shabbos. Mashber, because the word mashber itself, it's Meloshon Shabbat, like the contractions and the whole birthing process is called the mashber. Yeah, because Meloshon Shabbat, I guess, because like it breaks the woman's body, it's very, very, very painful for her. Yeah. Okay. So she sits on the booth stool, she goes into labor on Shabbos, umeis the Shabbos, and then she dies on Shabbos. Mevi'in sakin, we bring a knife, umakarim es kresa, we cut open her stomach, or my tzien, it's a blood, and we take out the baby.
In
that case, it was on Shabbos, and she died while giving birth. So therefore, we cut her open and take out the baby, and we extract the baby. Ah, so one second. So first of all, Shittim Kubetis brings from Rashi Ksaviad that we just said that the baby dies first, that would only be when the baby is still firmly in the womb. But just like we said in the Mishnah, that once it starts moving, then already it's considered, as we said in the Mishnah and in the Gemara, that Gufa Achrinahu, it's already considered a separate body. By the same logic, once it starts moving, not necessarily is a tyrus so utterly dependent on the mother that as soon as she dies, that he's going to die before her. So to speak, the drop of the Malach HaMavis is going to affect him before her. So therefore, in that case, there's a fair chance that he may still be alive. Therefore, we have to cut her open to save him.
So labor is the only exception when the baby doesn't die before the mother?
That's what we're saying. Well, we're saying two exceptions. One is labor. One is if she goes into labor before she dies. And the other one, if she was executed or otherwise, within natural death, yeah. And that's according to Rashi. There are other Mephoshim who say, actually, for example, the Magen Avraham brings this on Shulchan Aruch, and the Alpha Deva brings it, is the difference is, with Dinei Mominus, we can go according to the Roy. Rove, most of the time, babies die before, when the mother dies of natural causes, the baby dies first. But when it comes to Pikuach Nefesh, you can't throw a coin to Rove. You always have that tiny little meal. There might be that slight possibility that the baby is still alive. We can't assume that it was just convulsive motion like we did with the tail of a lizard. Therefore, it's Pikuach Nefesh. Pikuach Nefesh is very difficult. Of the baby, yeah. So the question is, Pshita, isn't that, although, I mean, that gets into a whole interesting discussion about why it's considered Pikuach Nefesh. If we said before the baby, while it's still in the womb, is not considered completely a separate life, and therefore when we execute the mother, we execute him as well. So there are some Mephoshim who learn that actually what it is the baby, in a certain sense, the baby can be considered alive. It's just he's locked up, basically. He's locked up behind the womb. Okay, so in that sense, you could argue that at least at a certain stage of the pregnancy, he could be considered alive. But nevertheless, fine. As far as when you execute the mother, fine. Again, you know, But as far as the Pikuach Nefesh, again, we can argue that it's considered a life. Okay, so the question is, in that case, Pshita, isn't it obvious that you can cut her open in that case? My Ovid, after all, you have to ask, what Malacha do you think it would be doing to cut her open on Shabbos? Talking on Shabbos. But after all, you're thinking, well, it would be also Daraisa to do it normally, but because of Pikuach Nefesh, we're going to allow it. What Issu Daraisa would there be anywhere? Mechatech Levatahu. All you're doing is cutting dead flesh. She's dead already. The issue of choivel, the issue of choivel, of injuring or no, one second. If she was alive, then to cut her would be a malacha of choivel. We would allow it on Shabbos because of the Pikuach Nefesh. But one of the 39 malachas is choivel, is wounding an animal or a person and extracting blood.
Right.
So therefore, if she's alive, then okay, there's a chidush in it that it's better for Pikuach Nefesh. But if she's dead, if she's dead, then anyway, there's no malacha involved. So what's the chidush that you're allowed to cut her open on Shabbos?
No malacha if she's dead.
Yeah, what would be there's no malacha of choivel? No. Chitoch is only when you're cutting, when you, it's the same way you're allowed to cut meat at the Shabbos table, right? Is it dead? So the same way. The answer is, Omer Rabba, lo nitzrucha lahavi sakin derech rishos adin. You're right. The chidush is not so much that you cut her open. Daraisa we're talking about. The chidush is not so much that you're allowed to cut her open. Fine, because that would only be mechatech lebasir. The chidush is that lahavi sakin derech rishos adin. Even if for that purpose you have to carry a knife through the rishos adin, because you don't have a knife available, you're still allowed to do that. Because of the matter of the Pikuach Nefesh for the baby. Okay. So the question is, my Kamash Mohan, in that case, what is the Chiddush? The Mesveka Mechalalin and Shabbosah. Are you telling me that the Chiddush is that based on a suffix that you might be able to save the baby's life, you should be Mechalal Shabbos? You don't need us. You don't need to be told that. Tanena, we learn and we don't need Shmuel to be telling us. We have a Mishnah in Yoma that tells us, Mishan Nafla Olamapolis. If a building collapsed on a person and you don't know whether he's alive under the rubble, and not only that, Suffolk Husham, Suffolk Enisham, it's doubtful even whether he's there or not. You know he was there at one point, but you don't know whether he left or not. Suffolk Chai, Suffolk Mess, it says Suffolk whether he's still alive or whether he's dead. Suffolk Knani, Suffolk Israel, or Suffolk whether he's a Goy or a Jew, because in principle, the concept of saving a life on Shabbos is only for Jews. And nowadays, because of Ava and because of various other considerations in general, they allow it to Pikuach Nefesh for Goyim as well. But in principle, no, it's not really Midrabban. It's a matter of Ava, really. It's a matter of that you don't want to.
I have a question for Rob once, and people very pleasant to me, and he said no.
As far as I know, most poskim nowadays say yes, but maybe, I don't know, maybe, I'm not sure. Anyway, the point is, so in other words, at least Medina de Gemara, if you knew that he was a goy, then you wouldn't be allowed to be Mechal Shabbos for him. And the Gemara in Avodah Zarah says, actually, at least you can use a logical reason for it. You can say a Jew who keeps Shabbos, we can be Mechal Shabbos for him. A goy who doesn't, nowadays, such a thing wouldn't really be accepted, and therefore many poskim say that halacha is not really applicable nowadays. Anyway, the point is, even though you have all these spikers, mefakin all of a sagal, you still uncover, you still dig up the rubble and try to save him. So therefore, so we know already for a suffix, you're mechal shabbos. So what's the chiddush of Shmuel that in the case of the dead mother, you do the same thing? The answer is mau de tema, yeah, but you would think there's a difference. Because in that case, the person that you think is trapped under the rubble, he had a chazaka of being alive. He was at one point. You know he was alive. Now the question is, after the building collapsed, is he still alive? But you know that beforehand. You know that yesterday and the day before, he was alive. Here, the baby never had a chazaka of being alive because it was in the womb. So therefore, Amaloi, maybe not, maybe you shouldn't.
You think the baby dies first?
No, either that or because, yeah, especially if it's generally the case that the baby dies first. But yeah, I mean, it was never fully alive before that. Amaloi, so maybe you shouldn't be allowed. Kamash Malon, and that is Shmuel's Chiddush, that still you're allowed to.
Maybe you would say that you would not be allowed?
Maybe you would think, so therefore he's telling you that you are.
From the fact that
that's what Shmuel was telling them. Now, actually, the
Shmuel... So the baby is considered dying first?
No. So, you have a few different possibilities. According to Rashi Ksaviyad, that Shittim Kabetis brings, we're talking about once the mother went into labor before she died, so therefore the baby already moved. Shittim Kabetis here, on Omid Beis, brings from Tosfos, a different collection of Tosfos, that we're talking about over here even more than that. We're talking about over here that the baby's head already came out. Only then could he be Mechal Shabbos. It's not so partial because, again, well, that's the point. In other words, because it didn't have Chazaka de Chayosa. It didn't have Chazaka previously. Previously, it didn't have Chazaka de Chayosa. Yesterday and the day before, it wasn't alive yet, as opposed to, and even now, when it's born, you still have for 30 days considered a Suffolk Nafel, right? Suffolk that it may not survive. Okay, but that's the point. In other words, so therefore, maybe arguably only in that case would you be. Only when the head comes out. And then you have other explanations, including one interesting one, which is the whole reason why we say you're allowed to be Mechal Shabbos, well, not the whole reason, but one of the reasons that you're allowed to be Mechal Shabbos, that you're supposed to be Mechal Shabbos for the Kuach Nefesh, is on the basis, the expression is Chalal of Shabbos Achat Kedesh Yishmer Shabbos Es Habe. Violate one Shabbos on his behalf so that in the end he can keep many more Shabbos. Over here, that's exactly the situation. This baby can grow up to keep many Shabbosim. Therefore, you still have the obligation to save him. Right? So that would point. So that would be the case when you cut open the mother, and as we said, even bring a knife through the Shoset Avim. Now, in Shulchan Aruch, actually, it says it's not so simple. Regardless of whether we take Rashi's or Tosfos's or whatever view of the matter, in Shulchan Aruch, it points out that you have a different issue. It's not so easy to establish when the mother has died. And the problem is, if she's not completely dead yet, then you cutting her open is going to kill her. Then you're killing her for a suffix of saving the baby. So therefore, so in Shulchan Aruch it says that this halacha is not necessarily applicable. Although Achronim nowadays, as Gesher Achaim, for example, writes, nowadays we do have that expertise again. The doctors have a little more expertise to be able to tell when the mother is dead and when not. So therefore, he says... Okay, so he argues that at least in such cases, it should be allowed again.
When we know that the mother is dead.
And there's a fascinating and rather depressing, actually, tshuva in the Tshuvas Mima Mak, Shailas of Tshuvas Mima Makam. I've mentioned to you before, it's a collection of there was a rav in Kovna during the Holocaust. People came and asked him all kinds of shailas about how to keep mitzvahs and what to do under the worst conditions over there. He wrote briefly out the Shailos HaTshuvos on scraps of paper. One second, he hid him away in a canister or something. He was eventually taken to a concentration camp, whatever, he survived. He made it back there after the war. He managed to find this canister. And yeah, eventually he published 5 volumes of Shailos HaTshuvos called Mimah Makim. Shailos HaTshuvos Mimah Makim. Based on Mimah Makim, Kratzich Hashem, of course. So one Shailos that they asked him was, that there was a pregnant woman, a Nazi officer, Yimach Shemoi, shot her or stabbed her or whatever and killed her. And the question was, what do we do as far as cutting her open to save the baby based on our Gemara over here? So he mentions, okay, but I mean, on the one hand, you have Rashi's point over here that only when she went into labor can we say that there's a chance the baby is alive. Tosfos is, though, that maybe you can only do it once the baby's head actually comes out. On the other hand, you have what the Gemara is saying over here, that if she was killed, which of course is the case over here, then I think in that case, actually, she didn't die right away. Like, she was still hanging on by a thread, but like the doctor said, they can't really save her life, whatever. Anyway, at the time, of course, he wasn't getting into this whole other issue. He had to decide the answer on the spot based on his knowledge of Torah. But afterwards, in the printed Shailos HaTshuvos, he goes into an arichos about what to do. In the end, he says that he told them at the time, and afterwards he backed it up with sources, that yes, they should cut her open and then do their best to save the baby. And that's what they did.
And that's based on what?
Based on the condition, in particular, the situation over here that was saying that when she was killed suddenly, there's much less of a chance that the baby died before her. The odds are the baby is still alive in there, unlike the case where she died naturally.
The baby doesn't necessarily...
That we said before, natural death versus unnatural death. Here it was unnatural because the Nazi had shot her. But besides that, also, in that case, also, again, since the doctors are saying that we don't really have a chance of saving her life, so that also factored into... That's what we said. That's why that was the Magen Avraham's point, that there is that slight chance, and that's why you have to be Mechallel Shabbos to cut her open. Again, you have the point that it says in Shulchan Aruch that we don't necessarily know when she herself is dead. That factored into this also. But here, again, even though she's still alive, she's, you know, it's only going to be another couple of minutes, whatever. So I mean, there's a lot to unpack as far as this, but this Gemara over here is one of the major sources for dinim involving abortions and autopsies also factors into it over here because actually there's an interesting tshuva from the Noda Biyahuda about the question. Basically, a person died of some disease, and the doctors are saying if we can autopsy him, it'll help for the future to be able to understand the cause of this disease and save other people. And the Noda Biyahuda says that's not a good reason enough to be master an autopsy. If there's another person right then and there who we can save his life, then like we're saying over here, you have to, and you don't worry about Nivul HaMes or whatever. But otherwise, Nivul HaMes, as we said on Amud Aleph, is a strong consideration.
Technically, today, with today's technology, you could do an autopsy without cutting the body with MRI. And you would see exactly what's going on.
Okay, so maybe that would be mutter. I don't know.
It has to be.
Okay, it could be. I don't know. All right, let's go.
So to recap, the
various halachas over here, again, if the woman is going to be executed, we don't wait for her to give birth and we hit her first to make sure the baby dies first so there's no nivul HaMes. If she goes into labor, we wait for her to give birth. If a woman is killed unnaturally, dies unnaturally, then the assumption, then violent death, then there's a high likelihood the baby is still alive. Therefore we try to save the baby. If she died naturally, then as far as dinim mominus, we say the chances are the baby died first. As far as matters of Shabbos, according to one opinion, according to the Magen Avraham, maybe we say that after all we have to consider the slight possibility the baby is still alive. Again, according to Rashi and Tosfos, maybe not. Only if she went into labor, only if the baby's head came out, etc.
We don't hold like that.
Well, I mean, in Shulchan Aruch it mentions, the Magen Avraham brings this idea about Sofik Pikuach Nefesh, and the Asur Rebbe brings it in his Shulchan Aruch. So yeah, that's the accepted halacha. With the caveat, again, in Shulchan Aruch, that not necessarily is it so easy to establish if the mother herself is dead, and if she's not, then you can't kill her in order to save the unborn baby, yeah. Okay, then we said in the Mishnah, Ha'isha Shenergo B'chol. We said when a woman was executed, we say her hair is Mutar B'Hanah. So the question is, Ramai, why is it Mutar B'Hanah? Isuri Hananin. It's attached to her body. Anything that's part of the body and that's attached to the body is also B'Hanah. The Gemara in Sanhedrin has a whole sugi over there about that a mess is also B'Hanah. Right. So Rav says, yes, but the case we're talking about in our Mishnah is where she says before she's executed, give my hair to my daughter. Question is, what good does that do? And if she had said, give my hand to my daughter, would we chop it off and then give it to her? Of course not. The hand and all of her body is also B'Hanah. Why is the hair any different? Yeah, in other words, you're not going to say after she's executed, we're not going to say that Beis Din is going to follow her last will and testament and cut off her hand from the body and give it to and then give it to
before
the execution. They can't anyway. They have no right. They have a right to execute her because the Torah says so, but they don't have a right to otherwise disfigure her, to otherwise do other things like cutting off her hand or whatever. And here, Bepashtus, we're talking about she was killed with her hair on. So why is the hair mutter? The Rav says, because we're not talking about over here her natural hair, we're talking about over here hair extensions. Which means Rashi says that when women in those days, when they had very little hair, like when their hair was thinning, when they're older or whatever, they would take hair from other women and use it and braid it into their hair. So Rashi actually uses the expression "hair noshim nachrias," hair from goyish women. But why not?
They could have done it
at Avodah Zarah. If they did it at that was the problem with Indian Shaitals 15 years ago. Fine, but you average Goyish woman doesn't donate her hair to Avodah Zarah. So, yeah. Okay. With that said, I mean, this Rashi is in parenthesis, and the Tzon Kodshim takes it out, and actually in the time of the Tzon Kodshim, you're talking like 400 years ago, there was a big argument among the Rabbanim of that time whether you're allowed to do, whether a woman is allowed to do that, to take hair like that and then braid it into from a goiter or whatever and then braid it into her own hair. Yeah. Okay, anyway. So when it's Peah Nachris, it's not her own hair. Okay, so the question is, timer to Amr Tanu. Okay, so you're saying then that only if she said before she was killed, give it to my daughter, only then are we saying it's not Osabana, because you have two things in its favor. Number one, that's not part of her body, it's not part of her own hair. And number two, that she said to give it, implying Hala Amr Tanu, implying that if she didn't say give it, Gufu, you would still consider it part of her body, even though it is, even though it's not part of her body, or mitzar, and it would be also the logic that we're saying, in other words, that apparently in order for it to be mutter, you need two factors. Number one, it has to not be part of her actual body, and number two, given though that after all it is tied to her hair, because braided into her hair or whatever, in order for it to be mutter, it would also have to be that she said tsnuoy silabiti. Because then, in effect, what it means is, Rashi says, she doesn't want it to be considered part of her body and become also. So implying that you need both of those factors. The question is, why do you need both of those factors? We find that Rabbi Yosi Reb Chanina has a suffix about a similar case. Because we have a question, Rabbi Yosi Reb Chanina has a question like this. We know with an Irani Dachas, all the people in the city who worshipped Avodah Zarah are executed. We know that also anybody who was in the Irani Dachas who did not worship Avodah Zarah, they don't get executed, but their nechasim are still destroyed. They shouldn't have lived in a city of Rishoyim like that. Therefore, that's the Gemara mentions over there, the concept that that living together, being a shochan with Rishoyim, is a very bad thing.
So
if they were captive, I don't know. But the point is, we're talking about the regular situation where there's citizens of the city, and instead of leaving when they saw that the city is becoming an Irani Dachas, they stayed there. So therefore, it's like Loit with Sodom, and therefore they lose all their possessions. In fact, Rashi actually uses the expression over here, Tzadikim Shebaseicha Yot Mimenu Arumim, that the Tzadikim there have to leave there naked, but literally all their clothes are also. Although it's interesting because it's not so simple. Rashi and Sanhedrin seems to say a little differently, that they are allowed to keep the clothes that they're wearing. So there's a bit of discussion among the Achronim what exactly the parameters of it are, what is also, but most of their belongings are gone. Yeah. So, and Rabbi Yosi Reb Chanina asked the question, say or noshim tzidkonius mahu, what would be the din about the hair of the women who are tzidkonius, not tzidkonius like a tzedekus, but in other words, relative to the other people, namely that they didn't worship Avodah Zarah. So what is the din of their hair? And Rava says that Rabbi Yosi Reb Chanina is not asking about the question of if this tzadekis has a wig or hair extensions or whatever, which she tied onto her, which she tied on or braided onto her hair. Rabbi Yosi Reb Chanina's question would be if it was hanging on a sichza. A sichza can mean either a hairpin or a peg. And there's actually two different explanations over here. It doesn't mean that Rabbi Yosi Reb Chanina is saying, in other words, you can have like this. You can have where she actually braided or otherwise attached the peyer nachos to her own hair, versus you could have where she only pinned it on, like women nowadays pin on their shakers. That Rabbi Yosi Reb Chanina's question is, in that case, is it considered part of her or not? Is the fact that it's pinned to her hair, is that enough to make it considered part of her body or not? The other explanation, that's the question. Once that, that's the point. That's Rabbi Yosi Reb Chanina's question. The other explanation is that if it's pinned to her hair, for sure it's considered part of her body. The Rabbi Yosi Reb Chanina's question is, let's say it's hanging on a peg or a hook or whatever in her house. Still, since she normally wears it right there on her hair, then maybe it's considered part of her body or part of her immediate clothing, which would be mutter or whatever. So that's the question. So the point is, in other words, Rabbi Yosi Reb Chanina has a question on that. So what are you telling me as a given that this woman who's being executed, that if she doesn't say give the hair extensions to my daughter, then automatically they become also b'hana because they're considered part of her body? According to Rabbi Yosi Reb Chanina, that itself is the question. The answer is hocha de mechaber. Yeah, but the difference is like this, because over here the fact is, It is attached to her. It's not a permanent attachment, but nevertheless, it is attached to her, and therefore it is going to be also bahana unless she specifically says otherwise.
Why don't we say like a knot? There's no kaima here.
No, but the point is, once it's braided in or otherwise attached to her hair, then that's considered. Yeah, Nevertheless, therefore, taima de amra tnu. Only if she says, give it to my daughter or to whoever, then we say, to begin with, she's saying, in effect, I don't want this to be considered part of my body, therefore it shouldn't be also, even though the rest of my body is also. Hala amra tnu. But if she doesn't say tnu, gufohu, then it's considered part of her body, because it is, after all, attached to her body, or mitzav, and therefore it becomes also. So it does depend on her, on what she says, on what she says, whether she says station or not.
Yeah.
No, but it's attached to her body. There is actually some discussion among the Achronim. If you have something which is on the body but not attached to it, for example, a ring on the finger, that doesn't necessarily become osir along with the body. So it's not actually attached in any way. As opposed to, not really. I mean, it's on the finger, but it's not attached to the finger in any way. As opposed to over here, it's braided into the hair or woven into it or whatever, so that's different.
What about a golden tooth?
A golden tooth actually might have to be an issue if it's attached. Yeah. Okay. So, Tashalel of Nachmeis. However, of Nachmeis finds this difficult. Because, V'hadumya de behema katani. Because let's go back to our Mishnah. We mentioned two cases. One where a woman, one with a woman's hair, and the other one we said a behema that's being executed by Beis Din, where we said the whole behema is usur. So the hadrumya de behema katani. The Mishnah seems to be equating the case of the woman being executed and the animal being executed. Therefore, ma hosam gufe. That was the case of the animal. The pastures were talking about the animal's own hair or its own skin or what have you, because you don't usually put hair extensions on an animal. So the same thing over here with the woman who's being executed. We shouldn't be talking about wigs or hair extensions or whatever. It seems we're talking about her actual natural hair. So what do you mean that it would be mutter? Don't you have the problem that it would be also bana? Ela, Omer Rav Nachman, rather Rav Nachman says there's a different reason. Never mind hair extensions or anything. We're talking about her actual hair. Why is her actual hair mutabana? Because zu misasa isarta. Because in the case of the woman, when does her hair become osabana? Only when she actually dies. The zu gmardina isarta. As opposed to when it comes to an animal being executed, it actually becomes osir as soon as the gmardin is done. As soon as we have in the case of the Shara Nisko, for example, as soon as based in Paskins that this animal needs to be executed, right then it's also bahana. And in fact, if you were, for example, if you were to shech that animal, it would be also to eat.
The question was,
again, why is the hair of this woman mutar bahana? And the answer is because the woman is being executed. So in other words, Rav Nachman Yitzchak is saying, forget about hair extensions, forget about wigs, forget about anything. Yeah, Rav Nachman Yitzchak doesn't need the tenu. According to him, we're talking about just that. We're talking about her own hair. Okay. It's also bahana. The reason is because when does the hair become? When does any of her body become also bahana? When she's actually killed, the hair is not considered to be part of that because the hair doesn't change after death. There's no difference in the hair, unlike other parts of the body which change and decay and whatever. After death, hair does not.
Nails also does.
Okay, so maybe her nails will be mutter also. I don't know. Who's going to use her nails, though? At least her hair they can use for wigs or whatever. Okay, the point is that her hair doesn't change, and therefore it's not going to be also bahana. As opposed to the behema, it's not a matter of it actually being executed. Once the gmar din is done, right then the animal becomes also bahana. So therefore, there's reason to say that even its own hair or fur or whatever is also. That's the difference because that's how it is. Because the Torah says "Sakul yisakul ashov lo yachol tsarei." You don't have any similar thing by a human being. Therefore, by a human being, they don't become asabana until they're actually killed. Maybe the reason is because by a person, you have a possibility that you may exonerate them, whereas with a behemoth, it's less likely. What do you mean? Yeah, the pasuk says, they were made, so they have to be executed. But fine.
Right, so it's fine.
Okay. No. But okay. But the fact is that it's only fine. But when the Torah says "Sakul yisakul ashov lo yachol tsarei," it means it doesn't need to tell you that after skila you can't eat the meat of it. Of course not. It's nevela. The point is, even before skila, if you shecht it, it's still also bahana.
Okay.
So that's the distinction. Tony Levi Kavosei. Now, so we have a machloekas then. So we have Rav saying that the case of our Mishnah is talking about, number one, where it's hair extensions, and number two, where she actually said, give it to my daughter. And Rav Nachman Yitzchak is saying, on the other hand, we're talking even about her own hair, that it would be mutabana. So, Tony Levi Kavosei the Rav, Tony Levi Kavosei the Rav Nachman Yitzchak. Levi taught a braisa like Rav, and another braisa like Rav Nachman Yitzchak. Tony Levi Kavosei the Rav. If a woman is being taken out to be executed, and she says, give my hair to my daughter, then we give it. This is a braisa that supports Rav's position. Yeah. Mesa, but if she dies without saying that, then you don't give it. Because a mess is also ba'na and everything that's attached to them. So the question is, shita, of course a mess is also ba'na, what's the chiddush of that? Ella, what we mean is shenoye ha mess also ba'na. The decorative things for the body, for example, in this case, the hair extensions or the wig or whatever, the hair nachris, are also ba'na. So there we see. Well, that's the point. In other words, you would have thought that not, because they're not part of her body. Therefore, we're saying, unless she says tnu, if she says tnu, then it means she herself is in effect saying, I don't want this to be considered part of my body. I want it to go to my daughter or to whoever. But otherwise, by default, it's also by no. Exactly.
Because it's part of the body.
Considered part of the body. Exactly. So that braisa, therefore, goes according to God. Tanya Kavaseh of Nachmi. We learn, on the other hand, also a braisa like Nachmi. If a woman dies, you can have ana from her hair. In other words, we're talking about her actual hair, no hair extensions or whatever. On the other hand, if an animal is executed by Beis Din, then it's also ba'ana. So what's the difference between one and the other? The difference is just that. Because in the case of a woman, the iser comes into play when she dies. On the other hand, with a behemoth, it comes into play when the Gemar Din takes place, and therefore there's in other words, again, the hair doesn't change after Misa, so therefore, in the case of the woman, there's no reason to ask her that hair, because it doesn't get affected by the Misa. But on the other hand, with a behemoth, it's also as soon as Gemar Din takes place. So what is the halacha like, actually? The Rambam paskins like Rav Nachman Meir Yitzchak, that even her own hair is mutter, because, again, it doesn't change after death. In Shulchan Aruch it brings that would only apply to this particular case. We're talking about Isha Hayotze Lahorig, again, because we're saying that only her Misa makes her also. In a regular case of a woman who dies from some other cause, then we say this din that would be mutter would be like Rav, it would only apply to wigs and hair extensions and things So if they're not tied onto the body at all, then they're mutter. That's why, in fact, it says that Amos says that's why you're allowed to take the rings off, because they're not tied to the body. On the other hand, if he says that they should give them, then you're allowed to. So in other words, sometimes the halacha is like a nachmeitza, that even the hair is mutter when a woman is executed. Sometimes the halacha is like that, that it's only so that only that hair is always osur, and only hair extensions and rings are osur. That's what I'm saying. When she's executed, then the halacha is like a nachmeitza. That even her hair is mutter. When she dies of other causes other than being executed by Beis Din, then her actual hair is actually usur, and only hair extensions and wigs and whatever would be mutter, if they're tied or whatever to her body, and only if she says beforehand to give them.
And that's mutter.
Right. Okay. Hadron alacha kol ma'alich. Mishnah says, Ein rochin pochus mi sela v'lo yoyser achamishin sela. There's never an erech less than one sela, and never more than 50 sela. Now, we've talked in the first perek about the concept of hesed yad, which is that if a person pledges an erech and they can't afford the full erech, then the koyan evaluates how much they can afford, which we'll talk about the details of it in the fourth perek, and then they pay that amount. So it's never less than a sela and never more than 50 sela. Kesad, what does that mean? Nosan sela, suppose a person pledged an erech and he paid a sela, the hesher, and later on he became rich. Einan nosan klum, he doesn't have to give anything else. The fact that he gave one sela at the time because that was all he could afford makes him potter.
It was at the time of the pledge.
At the time of the pledge,
or
right.
At the time of the payment.
At the time of the pledge, I think it is. Maybe actually, I think in the fourth paragraph we're going to talk about that, about if he could afford it at the time and later on. I don't remember actually about that, but we'll get to that later on in the fourth paragraph. But right now we're whatever it is. When they evaluated him, when they did the Hesediah, they found all he can afford is a seller. So therefore, they took that seller. Now, later on, he became rich, and in Yotzin Klumi, doesn't have to give anything else. He was Yotzin. On the other hand, Tochas mi seller, but if he gave less than a seller, the Hesher, and then he became rich, Yotzin Chamishim seller, then he has to give 50 seller. Some of the Mefarshim learn, actually, that what it means is he would give the remainder, whatever it takes, to bring up to 50 seller. So he gave half a seller, let's say he has to give another 49 and a half. Some of them actually understand that the original half a seller he would give wouldn't even count, and he'd have to give the full 50. And the Rambam writes the third possibility, which is they don't even take from him the half a seller. They just tell him, fine, right now you're not giving us anything, but you owe us 50 seller if you ever get it. Suppose, let's say he pledged an erech of 50 sloim, and all he has, let's say, is 5 sloim. Rameyer says all he has to give is one seller, and then he's yotzeh. The chamim noisin as kulam. The chamim says he has to give all of them.
If he
pledged an erech, let's say, of 50 seller, all he has is 5 seller when they come to be married. So now Reb Meir says he doesn't have to pay 5 sloim, all he has to pay is 1 seller. In other words, Reb Meir understands that when you pay an erech, it's either 1 seller or the actual amount. There's never any in-between. The Chum say no, he has to give all 5 because that's what he can afford right now.